Today is March the 28th, 2018, on this Wednesday. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key, and my colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of this program is available on wbai.org/archive, prn.fm, and on our website, pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM 99.5 on the radio and PRN.FM on the internet each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are slightly different. In the news this evening, Facebook's Cambridge Analytica scandal and how we got here. Facebook gives VPNs a bad name. Zuckerberg's breach of trust with the community of users, and Facebook in the aftermath of Cambridge Analytica. For tonight's feature segments from the Tech Corner, I'll be talking about free ebooks and audiobooks, and Marty Winston in the Home Automation section will be talking about April Fool Day's fake news releases. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the station or my colleagues. Facebook is in a big brouhaha over its policy on security of personal data. Mark Zuckerberg says he's open to government regulation. That was the weirdest statement by any CEO of any major corporation. However, after reviewing what has happened and how it got to be a major public relations fiasco, it is no longer puzzling why he made that statement. Let's start off with some basic understanding of what is data. It can start with maintaining a list. It could be a list of contacts or friends and family with addresses and telephone numbers. In an earlier period of time, this was all notated on index cards, which evolved into a Rolodex file. Some of you have expanded this to include birth dates. As time passes, this may be expanded to include names of spouses and children, of family, friends, and business associates. The personal mailing list can easily be expanded to include doctors, dentists, medical information, and tracking online transactions. The amount of information can grow topsy-turvy by what additional fields of information you want to keep for reference. Before you know it, the whole thing can evolve into a profile which you probably do not want to share with anyone else. If you have this data of everyone in the neighborhood or community, you now have a simplistic definition for big data. Big data is defined as a data set that are so voluminous and complex that traditional data processing application software is inadequate to deal with them. There are five concepts associated with big data: volume, variety, velocity, and the recently added veracity and value. Given this volume of data of selective population set, what can you do with this information? This brings up the field of predictive analytics. Predictive analytics is the branch of advanced analytics which is used to make predictions about unknown future events. Predictive analytics uses many techniques from mining, statistics, modeling, machine learning, and artificial intelligence to analyze current data to make predictions about the future. This in turn leads into behavioral analytics. Behavior analytics is a recent advancement in business analytics that reveals new insights into the behavior of consumers on e-commerce platforms, online games, web and mobile applications, and Internet of Things. The end goal, however, is the engagement of the user. This could result in steering one to make a certain purchase. It could influence how you vote. It is, in simplistic terms, social engineering. It could be used for illegal gains as well as identity theft. The past 2 weeks with all the news about Facebook is that data that has been mined by Facebook has been compromised. You may think you don't have a problem if you're not on Facebook. I got bad news for you. Facebook has harvested and developed data that includes non-Facebook subscribers because you may have a friend on Facebook. What am I driving at? Facebook has been flying under the radar with a product called Onavo Protect. Onavo Protect is a VPN client from the data security app maker acquired by Facebook back in 2013 that has now popped up in the Facebook iOS app itself under the banner Protect in the navigation menu. Clicking through on Protect will redirect Facebook users to the Anavo Protect VPN security app listing on the App Store. It's unclear what percentage of Facebook iOS user base is seeing the option, or which markets may have had this listing before, as there has been little reporting on the feature. We do know that this is not the first time Anavo Protect has shown up in Facebook's app. The company also tells us it's been available in the Android app since around the same time. Marketing Anavo within Facebook itself could lead to a boost in users for the VPN app, which promises to warn users of malicious websites and keep information secure like bank account and credit card numbers. But Facebook didn't buy Anavo for security protection. Instead, Anavo VPN allows Facebook to monitor user activity across apps, giving Facebook a big advantage in terms of spotting new trends across the large mobile ecosystem. For example, Facebook gets an early heads up about apps that are becoming breakout hits. It can tell which are seeing slowing user growth. It sees which apps' new features appear to be resonating with their users, and a heck of a lot more. This data has already helped Facebook in a number of ways, most notably in its battle with Snapchat. The Wall Street Journal reported last August that Facebook could tell that Instagram's launch of Stories, a Snapchat-like feature, was working to slow Snapchat's user growth before the company itself even publicly disclosed this fact. This past fall, Facebook snatched up the teen compliment app, TBH, and quickly integrated a similar Q&A feature into its social network soon after. This all took place before TBH had truly established itself as a new social network. It wasn't clear at the time if it was a big thing or just a flash in the pan. Anavo insights into TBH fast rise and heavy engagement likely gave Facebook a big heads up. The Anavo app today has more than 33 million installs across iOS App Store and Google Play, according to the data from Sensor Tower. Around 62% of those from Google Play, which could be another reason why Facebook is giving Anavo a big push on iOS. The U.S. is currently the app's largest user base, followed by India and Brazil. Anavo App Store description explains that it's a part of Facebook, and it is used to improve Facebook products and services, gain insights into the products, and service people value, and build better experiences. Hey, it's spyware. However, it's not likely that all Anavo users understand they're actually feeding Facebook the information that it allows. It's feeding Facebook the information that allows it to take on any challenger to its social networking empire. That empire also includes WhatsApp and Instagram, as well as small acquisitions like TBH and MSQRD. This would not be the first time Facebook has integrated one of its mobile apps into Facebook itself. The company earlier made it easier to launch Instagram through a new Facebook feature, and it has tested and rolled out various WhatsApp integrations too. Now, let's fast forward to this past Sunday. Facebook, just the other day, took out full-page ads in 7 British newspapers and 3 American ones to apologize for the ongoing Cambridge Analytica data privacy scandal that has engulfed Facebook in a legal and regulatory nightmare. The ads, which take the form of an apology written by CEO Mark Zuckerberg, attempt to clarify the situation by reiterating that the company has already stopped third-party apps from getting too much information and that Facebook has started limiting the data apps that you sign up, an announcement that the company made earlier this week. "This was a breach of trust, and I'm sorry we didn't do more at the time," writes Zuckerberg. "I promise to do better for you." This new, more definitive apology comes just days after the chief executive flurry of interviews with American media organizations, which included CNN, Wired, The New York Times, and Recode. According to CNN, the ads appear in the Sunday edition of the UK newspapers, The Observer, The Sunday Times, More on Sunday, Sunday Mirror, Sunday Express, and Sunday Telegraph. In the United States, ads appear in The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Wall Street Journal. Notably, Zuckerberg's initial Facebook post addressing the situation last Wednesday did not say he or the company was sorry. Not until his televised broadcast interview with CNN did Zuckerberg verbalize an apology and only after days of deafening silence from Facebook's top leadership on the subject, since Cambridge Analytica revelations came to light a little over a week ago. As we understand it now, data mining, an analytics company based out of London, gained access to data on as many as 50 million Facebook profiles, thanks to generous data sharing policies Facebook app developers enjoyed back in 2014. This data, which was sold to Cambridge Analytica against Facebook's term of service. The fallout has been severe with numerous lawsuits, governmental inquiries, a delete Facebook user boycott campaign, and a sharp drop in share price that erased nearly $50 billion of the company's market cap. Let's read carefully that part of the apology. The company has already stopped third-party apps from getting so much information, and that Facebook has started limiting the data apps get when you sign up. They're just limiting how much info you can get. Who's to determine who gets how much and who should get less? If you're presently a Facebook user, you can continue or you can drop out of Facebook. Hey, you know my answer if you were to ask. Facebook says the personal information they have collected on you is an opt-in, consented by the user when they initially sign on. I dare say most users did not understand nor see the fine print when they joined Facebook. Facebook collection of personal data was not aggregated into metadata format. In metadata format, the information provided does not identify specific individuals. However, there's a fine line. For instance, you can obtain from the Board of Elections or the registered voters in a selected election district. It is possible to receive information which includes whether or not you voted in the past 20 years. Politicians value the list of voters who voted in the primaries as they would normally also vote the party line in the general election. Exactly how they voted is, of course, unknown, but the assumption that they voted party line is pretty much on target. Although the data may seem intrusive, it is public data. Facebook data collection or harvesting of data is not illegal. They claim it is only collected on those who opted in. But when they include contextual information extracted from their VPN app, that's almost like wiretapping of what users assume is private. After all, VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. Facebook will continue to do this unless there is legislation against it. Facebook used this information to their advantage against their competitors. If it is regulated, then their competition cannot reciprocate in kind. But there's another concern. For years, researchers and social critics have worried that the newest generation of American adults is less interested in news than those who grew up in the pre-digital age. Much of the concern has come from data that suggests adults aged 18 to 34, so-called millennials, do not visit news sites, read print newspapers, watch television news, or seek out news in great numbers. This generation instead spends more time on social networks, often on mobile devices. The worry is that millennials' awareness of the world as a result is narrow. Their discovery of events is incidental and passive, and that news is just one of many random elements in the social feed. This past week's revelation about Cambridge Analytica's use of data from 50 million Facebook users for potentially shady purposes has prompted many people to declare they will quit the social network in protest. One of the newest additions to the bandwagon is Elon Musk. Elon Musk just joined the Delete Facebook movement as he removed Tesla's and SpaceX pages from the website. The two pages had a combined total of about 5 million likes. Musk not so subtly announced his decision on Twitter by asking, "What's Facebook?" in response to a tweet calling to delete the social media platform. Apple's Tim Cook has called for stronger privacy regulations that prevent the misuse of data in the light of the controversial leak of Facebook user information. This is what he said. "I think that this certain situation is so dire and has become so large that probably some well-crafted regulation is necessary. The ability of anyone to know what you've been browsing about for years, who your contacts are, who their contacts are, things you like and dislike, and every intimate detail of your life, And from my own point of view, it shouldn't exist. We've worried for a number of years that people in many countries were giving up data probably without knowing fully what they were doing, and that these detailed profiles that were being built on them, that one day something would occur and people would be incredibly offended by what had been done without them being aware of it. Unfortunately, that prediction has come true more than once. From my perspective, the law either allows a collection of personal profile information or it bans such activity. To say well-crafted, it's a fancy way to say this practice will continue, but its use will be regulated. Let's cut to the chase. The problem is the practice itself and not how much data you are allowed to collect. The only reason why this data is collected is it has accounted for 88% of Facebook's profit. To ban it, Facebook would need to come up with a different way of monetizing the app. This would be wholesale change in how they would generate profits. That ain't gonna happen. It doesn't fly. Facebook's strong mobile advertising business helped the social network beat expectations on both the top and bottom line in the fourth quarter of 2017. Revenue grew 47% to $13 billion as the company's profit increased by 20%, even after accounting for an additional $2.3 billion in income taxes under the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. When Facebook started selling mobile advertising space in 2012, not even the keen optimist could have predicted how lucrative this decision would be, and mobile advertising has accounted for more than 90% of Facebook's revenue growth ever since and currently drives 88% of the company's total revenue. Facebook needs to be completely transparent to earn the trust of their user base. The company can erode and fall as quickly as the company has risen in social media. To do a recap of what has happened, it had originally been alleged that Facebook had been hacked and 50 million subscribers' profile had been compromised. That's not the case. These profiles were collected by Facebook and they monetized the app by selling the information. That is how their business model has been created. We talked about VPN as one of the tools that they use to collect the data. So I asked our webmaster, Michael Horowitz, to explain it in greater detail. So I called him up and this is what he had to say.
Okay, getting back to Facebook. You're telling me that it's not as secure as it should be, especially when it comes to iOS.
Where Facebook was found to be reading your text messages and making a note of all your phone calls, that was only on Android.
When you say make note of your phone calls, they just who you called and what the phone number is, but they don't have any part of the conversation, though.
Don't know.
And what about the Ars Technica article that talked about the fact that the Facebook is not secure?
Spying on you is exactly the same on both systems.
You said that when you go to the Google Play Store or you go to the Apple Store and you download the VPN, that there's no indication that it's any way related to Facebook.
Correct. Yes. If you're just looking for a free VPN, which is not a good idea, but if you're doing that and you see the Onavo Protect VPN, mm-hmm. you would have no idea that it was owned by Facebook.
They don't even say VPN. They just use the word Protect.
I think in the App Store, it does say VPN.
Mm-hmm.
I think on Android, too, it does say VPN. It is a VPN. It's just one that's spying on you. That's all.
Well, when you say spying on you, in what ways does it spy on you?
Well, first of all, you have to understand what a VPN does. What a VPN does is it encrypts everything coming and going between your computer and the internet. So you start off with an internet connection. Step one. Step two is software on your computer, which is called a VPN client, connects to a VPN server. There's hundreds and hundreds of companies offering VPN services, and they offer each one of these companies has hundreds of VPN servers that you connect to. So then once you make that VPN connection, everything into and out of your computer destined for the internet first goes to the VPN server computer, and the connection between you and the VPN server, everything's encrypted. So if you're a Verizon Fios customer, Verizon can't spy on you, because when Verizon sees what you're doing, it's encrypted. If you're in a coffee shop, you're in Starbucks, nobody who's connected to that coffee shop network can see what you're doing because it's all encrypted. Now, the problem becomes, of course, the VPN company then decrypts it and sends stuff out on the internet. So the VPN company, now they could spy on you. So how do you choose a VPN provider, since most of these companies don't have big public presence? And the standard way you choose a VPN provider, I mean, the knee-jerk reaction whenever you ask someone, how do you choose a VPN provider? It says, no logging, no logging, no logging, meaning that the VPN company is not keeping track of what you're doing. But the Facebook VPN does log. It keeps track of absolutely everything you're doing. Nothing to do with Facebook. Everything coming and going between you and the internet is tracked and logged and analyzed by the Facebook VPN.
And are you a Facebook user today?
No, never have been.
And if a good friend or relative asked you about whether or not they should drop Facebook, what would you tell them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They don't. I don't want them spying on me.
Well, can there be any legislation to fix the problem?
I doubt it. I sincerely doubt it.
What was your reaction to Mark Zuckerberg's apology in the New York Times?
I don't trust the company in the first place, so I don't pay attention to what they say.
What you're saying is, in the second place, you got the same answer. You don't trust them.
Yeah, I don't trust them. I mean, the reason I don't use them and haven't used them for years and years and years is because that's what they do, is they spy on you. They want to know everything about you, and I don't like that idea. So okay. This is, I mean, it's worse than people thought it was, but the basic concept hasn't changed. They make money by knowing everything they can about you.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Hank, I like you and Michael and everybody else have been getting a great many questions about Facebook and what's going on and is it dangerous and why should they do anything about it. My first answer to them is you're asking somebody who has already resigned from Facebook. My second point is they don't know why they should be worried, or I should be worried, since I'm not a spy for the Kremlin, since I don't get involved with strippers and pornographic actresses. The problem is that they don't understand the fear that I have that what can be done with big data and data mining and with artificial intelligence that can take my words and twist them around and bring them out as something else. A lot of people say, well, what's the difference if Cambridge Analytica did some data mining and they got some information? A lot of politicians do what they call opposition research. Yes. But I'd like to know who's doing the opposition research. Hank, did you know that Cambridge Analytica is owned by one of the biggest right-wing oligarchs in this country? An oligarch who has devoted himself to putting into office the people who are now running the White House. That concerns me more than a lot of other things. I've been told also that there's been in the special prosecutor's office a fairly good chance that Russia has been involved in corrupting our electoral process. All of these things lead me to be even more concerned about the amount of data that is out there going down. Have I ever said anything that could be misconstrued on Facebook? I don't know. I post articles, I repost illustrations, pictures, cartoons. How can that be twisted around? Michael, I think, said that he's never been on Facebook. Why? He never trusted them. Well, I didn't untrust them or distrust them. I didn't think about it for a number of years, but then eventually I realized that all these different pieces of data that are being gathered, whether Instagram, Facebook, and then I was told that some of the VPNs were not private, and they were virtual funnels into the data warehouses that these people were building. That made me even more nervous and more uncomfortable. It took me a long time to go along with Michael, but as soon as the Cambridge Analytica story came out, I went over to my Facebook account and said, stop, no more, ain't gonna do it. Did I lose anything from that? Did any of my relatives who've been sending me pictures and invitations, and they'll just have to go back to email? What a lot of them don't realize is there's a very convenient feature in email called blind carbon copy, BCC. And if they want to put a BCC on with a group that covers 15 or 20 or 35 of their relatives and friends, that's not a problem. They can do that. What they can't do with email is put up a billboard that anybody can drive by and see. I don't know that that's giving up so much. I don't know that that's such a problem. Until somebody comes up with a way of making humanity trustworthy, then I think you have to consider that anybody who is a part of humanity is not trustworthy. That's my opinion. I'd love to hear your opinion. Why don't you write to us at pcradio@gmail.com? We'd like to hear what your opinion is about our opinion, as well as what your opinion is about Facebook and the problems they're facing.
Facebook has been in hot water before over allegations of privacy intrusion and misuse of members' data. It weathered those storms, so it remains to be seen if this latest misstep will cause an exodus of users. However, Facebook appears to be caught up in some disturbing trends. For example, it lost 2.8 million U.S. users under 25 years of age last year. This was reported by eMarketer. A lot of the younger generation are no longer using Facebook, said Vincent Ranall, an assistant professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Emerson College. They're turning to platforms like Instagram and Snapchat. And by the way, I have two granddaughters who are teenagers, and they confirmed this. When I asked them about the use of Facebook, they said that's for older people. So this is not only about their current user pool, it's about their future user pool. Scandals like this are not going to help Facebook seduce this new generation of users. Since users under the age of 25 have grown up in an age when sharing data has been a fact of life, the Cambridge Analytica affair isn't likely to accelerate their departure from Facebook. However, that may not be the case for older users. Older users, particularly those that grew up before the advent of social media, are likely to begin abandoning Facebook at higher numbers. Facebook users hailing from Generation X and earlier have always maintained a stronger sense of personal privacy. Stories like these only confirm their wariness of social media. Many Facebook users will choose not to cut the cord. Facebook has a big problem, and I think users will leave in numbers, big numbers. Facebook is now part of the everyday culture in millions of users. There's a lack of another great platform or superior competition. Facebook has connected people in such ways that it would be hard to replicate the relationships that users have established and keep people connected in the way it has. But not all are migrating to Instagram. By the way, Instagram is owned by Facebook. The latest forecast on social network usage is that Facebook is losing younger users at an even faster pace than previously expected. And while the social media platform was able to count on Instagram to retain that younger audience in the past, Snapchat may now be siphoning away more users. This year, for the first time, less than half of U.S. internet users ages 12 to 17 will use Facebook via any device at least once a month. Facebook is still adding monthly users overall, but older age groups are mainly responsible for this. The number of total Facebook users in the United States will reach 169.5 million this year, just under 1% from 2017. Meanwhile, Facebook's proportion of social network users accessing the platform will continue to decline over the forecast period. For the first time in a while, less than half of American internet users between ages 12 and 17 will be using Facebook this year, according to research firm eMarketer. What's more, usage among 18 to 24-year-olds is predicted to fall as well by 5.8%. The firm also says that growth will keep falling for both groups for the next 2 years. Facebook will still continue to add users overall, but at a slower pace, predicted to be about 1% in 2018, and the growth will be chiefly among its older demographics. During its latest earnings call, Facebook reported that the number of daily active users in the United States and Canada fell for the first time ever by about 700,000. The company says it's not worried about the drop since the U.S. market is already so saturated and because it attributes the decrease to its own purposeful move to revamp the newsfeed algorithm. It is estimated the company will lose 2 million users under 25 this year. This should be worrying for Facebook on two levels. Having the future in mind, you don't want users to be aging, and the U.S. market is by far the company's most profitable. And then there's another issue. While the company could be banking on Instagram as its platform for the younger demographics, the research firm says that the users who are leaving Facebook are not necessarily migrating to Instagram. It says that Facebook's photo-sharing platform will add about 1.6 million users under 25, while Snapchat, which is a competitor, whose results beat expectations for the last quarter of 2017, will be adding slightly under 2 million users in that age group. Snapchat could eventually experience more growth in older age groups, since it's redesigning its platform to be easier to use. The question will be whether younger users will still find Snapchat cool if more of their parents and grandparents are on it. Well, that's the predicament that Facebook is in. Did Facebook commit a crime collecting personal data? No. In fact, it was an opt-in when you sign on to the system. Admittedly, the verbiage was so verbose that most users did not bother to read a multi-page data policy. Did they commit a crime making that data available to a third party? No. Many companies buy and sell mailing lists. The data needs not to be in metadata format. It could be specific to the individual. As I had noted, the amount of detailed information made available by all the different Board of Election jurisdictions are very detailed. It can go back 20 years. Did Cambridge Analytica misuse the data? There's no evidence of this. Back in 2012, Facebook made available the entire database to the Democratic National Committee. It is claimed this is not the same as Cambridge Analytica because the data given did not have any data extracted from the use of a VPN. Well, Facebook did not acquire Onavo, which is a VPN company, until 2013. I prefer that we do not pass well-regulated legislation as suggested by Tim Cook. We would just end up with a mountain of regulations, which I fear would also include politically correct rules. I believe in a free market. If asked, I would recommend dropping out of Facebook. If you still wish to stay in Facebook or join Facebook, do so with full awareness of the Facebook data policy. Join Facebook with an open awareness that you don't have any objections if your personal data can become public data. There's an old saying, if you're not paying for it, you are not the customer. You are the product being sold. About 25 years ago, I had a discussion with the late Andy Grove, who was the CEO of Intel, on the justification to drop the error detecting memory parity bit. By the mid-1990s, most DRAM memory had dropped parity checking as manufacturers felt confident that it was no longer necessary. RAM has largely fallen out of use for non-critical applications. His counter to me was that memory error only occurs when there's a blue moon, which is his way of saying it was very rare. Well, what is a blue moon in astronomical terms? The term blue moon has been used to distinguish the full moon as the second to appear within the calendar month. Full moons aren't exactly rare. A blue moon will light up the sky ahead of Easter this year. A blue moon will grace the sky this weekend. A full moon rose on March 1, and a rare parade of planets including Jupiter, Mars, Saturn, Mercury, and Venus, along with the bright star of Antares, lit the sky from March 7 through March 11. Now it's time for the blue moon to shine. Because February only had 28 days, this year's full moon carried over to March, confirming the March 31st full moon would be a blue moon. Squeezing a second full moon into the calendar month doesn't change the physical properties of the moon itself, so the color remains the same. Most blue moons look pale gray and white, indistinguishable from any other moon that you've ever seen. When can I see it? The blue moon will reach peak fullness early in the morning at approximately 8:37 a.m. Eastern Time on March the 31st, which is this Saturday. Don't miss it. The next blue moon won't come around again until spring of next year. Bring back the memory parody bit, as I've been hearing from many that they do get the blue screen of death because there was a memory error. The world's greatest literature, reference, and business books are readily available on your PC, tablet, and smartphone. Whatever you want to do, books will help you to do it. Whether it's changing careers, learning a new skill, or simply escaping to another world for a few hours, the right books will get you there. There is Project Gutenberg, gutenberg.org. Project Gutenberg is the oldest digital library in the world. Founded in 1971, it has mostly specialized in digitizing classics whose copyright expired and that are now in the public domain. Now it has over 54,000 ebooks, which you can search for by title, author, or keyword. If you're not looking for a specific book, you can browse the collection by bookshelf, which is Project Gutenberg's name for categories. The categories don't drill down very deeply, so I recommend having some idea of what you like to read first. A title, author, or subject would be ideal. You can also browse by title, author, language, and recently published. You can download it in a variety of formats, including plain text, HTML, PDF, MOBI, EPUB, and Plucker. That covers pretty much all devices, and you don't even need to register to start reading. The reading matter that is available is free. The great literature classics are in the library. If you prefer audiobooks, there's LibriVox. That's LibriVox.org. Started in 2005, LibriVox is a library of free audiobooks read by volunteers. Although audiobooks aren't technically ebooks, this is a great way of enjoying books on the move, keeping you entertained and informed on your morning commute. The LibriVox library uses Project Gutenberg's titles, with the Internet Archives hosting the audio. That means you mostly have access to classics. For some, this might be an easy way of familiarizing yourself with literature if you don't have the time to read the books themselves or if your sight is impaired. As well as being able to listen online, you can download the titles in MP3 format for use at home and on your mobile phone. There are links to the ebook versions on each title's page, and they run a twice-weekly podcast if you prefer to listen that way. All books are recorded in 128 kilobits, which makes it for pleasant, artifact-free listening. So there you have two great websites with millions of ebook titles to choose from. All the classics are there and many others too. So it's time to familiarize yourself with Dickens or just while away the hours with a bit of romance, hit the free books first and save yourself some cash. Oh, first let me just digress for a moment. Tomorrow, March the 29th, is the first day of the 2018 baseball season. All the teams are scheduled on this opening day. I grew up as a New York Yankee fan starting back in 1947, but I became a Met fan in 1962. Casey Stengel was the first Met manager, and he was quite a character. In 1962, which was their first year of play, the New York Mets set a professional baseball record that has yet to be broken on the way, unfortunately, to become futile but lovable losers. They lost 120 games in a season. And this reminded me of the poem Casey at the Bat. I downloaded this audio poem from LibriVox to share with you.
Casey at the Bat by Ernest Lawrence Thayer. Read for LibriVox.org by Ostrey Fingerhut. It looked extremely rocky for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-6 with just an inning left to play. And so when Cooney died at first, and Burroughs did the same, a pallor wreathed the features of the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go, leaving there the rest, with that hope that springs eternal within the human breast. For they thought if only Casey could get one whack, at that they'd put up even money with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, and so likewise did Blake, but the former was a pudding, and the latter was a fake. So on that stricken multitude a death-like silence sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and the much-despised Blakey tore the cover off the ball, and when the dust had lifted and they saw what had occurred, there was Blakey safe on second, and Flynn hugging third. Then from the gladdened multitude went up a joyous yell. It bounded from the mountaintop and rattled in the dell. It struck upon the hillside and rebounded on the flat, for Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing, and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance glanced in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said. From the benches black with people there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone in the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew, but Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two!" "Fraud!" cried the maddening thousands, and the echo answered, "Fraud!" But the scornful look from Casey and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold, they saw his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched with hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light, and somewhere men are laughing. And somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. End of poem. This recording is in the public domain.
Marty remembers the April Fool's Day fake news releases of the past and give us his new, more contemporary top 20 plus a brief lesson in Morse code.
This week I won't be talking about our cybernetic house project. Instead, I want to talk about special dates. Today, March 28th, is kind of special to me because of something that happened in Cleveland a long time ago. March 28th was Easter Sunday in 1948, and in the early hours of that morning, the first Easter babies started flirting with the nurses. Yeah, that's me. And today I turn 60-10. You do the math. This year, Easter is next Sunday, April 1st, also known as April Fool's Day. And no, I'm not suggesting there's anything tricky about Easter this year, although you may want to give everything in your basket a close look. It reminded me of a fun tradition of 40 to 50 years ago when technology companies came out with some fake news releases and product announcements, some of which you had to be a geek to enjoy. I particularly remember two of them from the gang of Texas Instruments. One of them announced the DED for dark emitting diode. I imagine that even at its highest output, it was extremely energy efficient. For those of you who want to create your own dark emitting diode, just drive too much voltage and current into a light emitting diode until it transitions out of light emitting mode and into dark emitting mode. There was also one about an amazing new computer adjunct, write-only memory. Even though it was only 1 byte wide, it had infinite capacity and could be built in the smallest form factors. Those got me thinking about fake fun April Fool's product announcements we could make these days. And that's hard, since so many of those are panhandling for crowdfunding on sites like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. But I do have nominees, and in case I offend anyone or come close to any real company's names, that would fall somewhere between accident and artistic license, and
all statements or opinions on this segment are exclusively those of this old-timer and not necessarily those of the program host or producer, station group owners, politicians, religious leaders, lobbyists, or sane people.
This sound is, speaking of old stuff, Morse code for the letters N-E-W-S. News. So, with our dots and dashes at the ready, stand by for these top 20 April Fool's new product news scoops. From Moneywell, a new thermostat that's so smart it won't let people fiddle with it. New from Singsong, the Galactic S99, the first smartphone with a built-in airbag. So when you drive distracted, at least the phone can save itself. From Yo Robot, the new Scatbot, the first fully autonomous floor care product that automatically seeks out those indoor doggy accidents and smooshes them into the floor. EG Lighting has a new LED bulb for the front door that blows out when people you don't want to see show up. Scramazon announces a new personal assistant that changes the subject if you ask for an answer you should already know. And it's just $5 per occurrence, or just $2 if you're primed. The Civilian Liberties Organization and the National Pop Gun Association announced a plan to merge the First and Second Amendments into a new special level of protection for people who just shoot off their mouths. The Texicans said they don't have enough hair pieces, and the ones they have aren't big enough or close enough to the border, so they don't expect to pay for the wall.
Why don't you get a toupee with some brains in it?
Inferno Revenue is looking into a reverse drone delivery service that picks up your paycheck and returns it to you to drop off the 16% that's your net after taxes and delivery fees. Nitwitbit is readying a new lower-priced wrist thing. They're first to just display random numbers that only by accident ever indicate how your workout worked out. Or maybe it isn't really there first. The little $35 Raspberry Pi computer is already as small as a deck of cards, but the House of Two Steves is working on one as thin as a single card, and they'll offer it for just $3,500. The new self-driving Pontiac keeps you safe by going on drives without you. New from Bozito, the first speaker system that puts out really terrible sound then blames you for not knowing how to listen. A partnership between Dr. Trey and Deisman brings you the first earbuds that about once a month provide you with free candles made by sucking out your earwax. A new hard drive from Seabait holds 1,000 terabytes, is smaller than a peanut, and runs on less than 1/10 of a watt. Its claimed read-write speed can reach up to 3 bytes a day. SanDisk has a new nano SD card for cameras that improves your photography by recognizing faces in your photos and replacing them each with a potato head. New from GoPro, the boyfriend camera that, just like a boyfriend, leaves you if it doesn't see enough action. Boogle just crossed its personal assistant with a cat. You still get a lot of irrelevant responses, but at least now you know why. A new super high-performance CPU from Intertel does more megaflops per microsecond than a politician, yet produces so little heat that it may take as much as 3 seconds to bring a pot of water to a boil. Duracell has a new flashlight battery that can keep an LED shining brightly for a full week, but it will only fit new flashlight designs since it's roughly the size of a beer keg. Cyber investigators finally got the cloud to respond to inquiries about whether it poses any security threats to Americans. The cloud responded with a single word, "Nyet." That's it for fake news. Our birthday wishes also go out to Fred Fishkin, Ed Begg, and Walt Mossberg. And while you obey Hank Key's advice to always back up, back up, back up, maybe he can tell me how to get back up the calendar, at least for my hair. Rubbing those fast food French fries on my head didn't help, but it did make me look a little like that guy from 666.
Thank you, Marty. Public service announcements of computer club meetings in the tri-state northeast area. Brookdale Computer Users Group will have a presentation on must-have utilities for your computer. Thursday, March the 22nd, 6:45 p.m. is the starting time of the meeting at the Middletown Library Lodge Meeting Room at 55 New Monmouth Road, Middletown, New Jersey. Princeton PCs Users Group will be meeting Tuesday, March the 27th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., Mercer County Library in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. The Danbury Area Computer Society will be meeting Tuesday, April 3rd. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Danbury Hospital Auditorium in Danbury, Connecticut. Westchester PC Users Group will have a presentation on different categories of artificial intelligence. Thursday, April 5th, meeting time 7 p.m. at the Keller Williams Realty, 120 Bloomingdale Road on the first floor in White Plains, New York. Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will be meeting on Friday, April the 6th with a presentation on home automation. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Scotch Plains Rescue Squad, 1916 Bartle Avenue in Scotch Plains. The New York Amateur Computer Club will have its general meeting on Thursday, April the 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Silver Building at NYU in Manhattan, New York. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group will have their meeting on Friday, April the 11th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. New York Institute of Technology, Old Westbury Campus, located at Northern Boulevard and Valentine's Lane, and they meet in the auditorium of the Harry J. Schur Hall. The meetings at the computer clubs are all free and open to the public, and we hope to see you there. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm on the Internet and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM 99.5 on the radio or WBAI.org streaming on the Internet. In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing, and this is no joke. I realize April 1st is coming up. It's not an April Fool's joke. Back up. If you still wish to stay in Facebook or join Facebook, do so with full awareness of the Facebook data policy. Join Facebook with an open awareness that you don't have any objections if your personal data can become public data. If you're not paying for it, you are not the customer. You are the product being sold. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again. Same time, same station next week.